Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. And I'm being introduced to the Popcorn Talk Network again. What's up? How's everybody doing? This is Action Movie Anatomy. I'm Ben Bateman, your host. This is Moby. The song that plays in the end credits of the film The Bourne Identity, which happens to be the film that we are doing today on the show. I'm joined today by my excellent, wonderful, lovely, as many adjectives as I can fit into one sentence, co-host Mr. Andrew Guy.
What's up, buddy? I love this movie. I'm very excited to talk about it. I'm also very excited that, Miss Stryer's back.
She's back. Roxy's back on the panel, guys.
I never thought it would happen. I didn't think I'd be invited back, but finally I got that phone call.
We literally could not find anyone else.
We never invited you back.
You called 15 people, said, who likes Bourne? Nobody took it, so you know.
Yeah, well, we know you've been on the waiting list for a while, and we ran through all the candidates, and, you know, they had various appointments today, so.
And I've been telling you that I want to do this movie because I love it so much.
It's a really good one.
This movie has not aged at all. I love it.
It was a game changer in 02, and actually watching it now, I really felt like it hadn't. Yeah, it feels like the 2000s, which is really funny to say. Like a lot of the style and the music and the tone definitely felt like a different time period.
Yeah,
but not in a bad way. Like a time capsule in the way that you watch like a great movie, like The French Connection or something from the 70s, and you're like, this is still awesome. Or The Godfather hasn't aged.
But it's the same thing in all those movies where things like sound editing has gotten better, and like, you know, chase scenes and stunts and like actual stunt coordination has gotten just a little bit better.
Definitely,
absolutely. And then there were some random actors that I forgot were in this movie altogether, and then rewatching it, I was like, holy crap, I love that person.
I totally forgot that it was Clive Owen.
Yeah,
I just 100% forgot.
Look what can make you give. It's one of my favorite lines in the whole movie.
And Gabriel Mann, who's on Revenge, and I cover that show for AfterBuzz, and he was in this, and I was like, oh my god, that's where I knew him from.
What role does he play?
He plays the assistant, he's blonde. He's really, really talented, though, and he's the lead on Revenge, so I was like, oh my god, I saw him before, and I never even knew.
I don't even watch Revenge, so I don't know that. Is it a good show?
Missing out.
Good things about it.
Yeah, towards the end it kind of went.
Anyway, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. Welcome to the show. We do action movies on this show, and today is The Bourne Identity. The movies that we do on the show have to adhere to four basic rules. Sometimes we jump outside the rules. I mean, occasionally we try our best to stick with them, but you know, we don't always succeed. Those four rules are: number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or things or beings in the room. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. And lastly, rule number four, there was at least one explosion.
I feel like you just described my life a little.
Right. You're like an action hero.
She is.
That's how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah?
Plays by our own rules.
You wore your action hero jacket.
This thing is sweet.
You know, it's just kind of my daily jacket that I borrowed from my room. but that was my life, so you know, I'm ready to talk about it from firsthand experience.
Yeah, so let's cue the trailer. We can talk about badasses who. This is not a good trailer. Did you watch it?
compared to what trailers can be, it's not great.
With the VO, ooh.
Well, like, I was thinking about how they would make a trailer now about, like, a super badass agent that wakes up with amnesia.
Yeah.
And it would be, like, really kind of startling at the beginning, and he'd, like, be in a bank saying something, and then he'd, like, do something really badass and be, like, an awesome caption, and you'd be totally intrigued. And, like, this one is, like, he has all the skills of an agent.
Yeah.
He was a gay
terror. Yeah.
I completely agree. If I watched this now, I would not be stoked for this movie. It doesn't do it justice in any way, shape, or form. But I guess it's a different time period. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but it's long enough that I can kind of excuse it.
Yeah, it's like
it does not do it justice.
I mean, if you think about the movies that were coming out in the 3 or 4 years prior with like people of his generation, like you had like Ben Affleck in Reindeer Games is a great example of a movie that I can remember the trailer for, where you're like, that's a horrible trailer for a horrible movie, and it's over dramatic. and obviously this was like a much bigger production than Reindeer
Games.
The
Sum of All Fears was another one that was just horrible.
But those are the movies that you have to put in the same genre of trailer, because like they're dramas driven by heartthrobs in the prime of their young career.
Didn't he also do Changing Lanes like right around then? Uh-huh. Oh, that was a really rough time for that poor guy.
Affleck, yeah.
Oh yes, I feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
Just what a bummer.
Right? Yeah. Seriously, his career.
Well, he swung back around, right?
I watched The Town last night.
Did you?
I'd love that movie.
It's a really good movie.
It's so good. Yeah.
Mm. He's kind of winning in the Affleck-Damon battle now.
I want to hear the Boston accents coming from you guys. You know, I'm an expert in all things Boston.
Fucking Tony.
that was okay.
It was all right.
Subpar.
I'm nervous.
Oh, I make you nervous?
You make me nervous.
Because of the jacket.
Don't get too nervous, man.
Yeah, danger. Yeah, it's just like...
And it just goes across me. Is.
Yeah. Danger is born. Yeah, I mean, they make it look like a B-movie.
Right, exactly.
It definitely looks inexpensive.
Yeah.
It definitely does. And it actually was inexpensive for its time.
Relatively, absolutely. Yeah. Like, it went over budget a little bit, but not bad.
You watch that trailer and you want it to be like, The Bourne Identity... Where you are the endangered species.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Congo trailer. Horrible, horrible tagline.
Yeah, right? Like,
I'm really glad I didn't remember this trailer, and I'm glad I watched the movie first.
Yeah
it wasn't very impressive. So, guys, we're going to get into our bold statements, which we start the show with. So every one of the hosts here, we come up with a strong idea that kind of sells what we think about this movie, maybe a moment in time or a strong opinion. It should never be like, I feel this is my favorite. It should be this is the greatest or this is the first or blah, 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 something like that. We will then share our favorite, our fist pump moment, which is that moment where you're on the couch and you're looking around. Is anybody else seeing this? This is so awesome. But before we do that, I do want to mention you guys should please rate and review us on iTunes. Keep us high in the ratings. It helps people find the show. We have Action Movie Anatomy mugs that we ordered that are on the way, and we are going to start giving them away to fans. So I have made this extremely overcomplicated in the last few weeks, but if you're watching the show now, this is the deal. Once we have 10 unique reviews on iTunes, once we have 10, only 10, we will start raffling off those mugs in a way that we see fit, and you guys will get them. So get us to 10, give us those ratings and reviews. All you got to do is you go to iTunes, you search Action Movie Anatomy, you find it, rate it, leave a review, and we will get you guys a mug if you win the raffle or whatever it is, the drawing.
It's a random drawing.
However
raffle.
We do it.
Ooh, this was a simplification? That was a simplified.
All you got to do is review.
Look, we're going to play Russian roulette. We're going to write all your names on a bullet, okay?
And on top of that, please, guys, check out the other shows on the Popcorn Talk Network. We have Anatomy of a Movie this Friday. They're going to be reviewing Agent 47 and American Ultra. So if you like our show, they do great movie reviews themselves.
And call me.
And Roxy has a show. She does.
I do DC Movie News on Thursdays at 2:45 Pacific Time. It's the best. If you like all things DC, we're talking about it. And also, of course, before us is Marvel, and they're great, too.
It's a good show.
They are.
And she They're loves great.
I love Marvel.
Back in compliment hour.
So let's get back to the Bourne Identity, guys. Let's start off with bold statements, thesis statements. What do you guys got?
Please. Okay. No, you go.
All right, ladies first. Marie's psychotic behavior is the driving force for action in this film.
Marie's psychotic behavior is the driving force for the action in this film?
Yep.
Is she psychotic?
Yeah, she's psychotic.
Defend yourself, Stryer.
I'm going to defend myself. I'm going to defend myself throughout, but right now. You think about this. She's standing there. She's causing a huge scene, first of all. That's how we see her. We're introduced like that. Then she goes outside. She lets a stranger in her car, a stranger she's well aware is running from the cops for the $10,000. She barely blinks, maybe for a second. Then she decides to stay with him, even though he says many times that she should run, that she should leave. She says, no. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stay with you because that's the smart play. The cops know I don't trust them. You, this guy that I met a little bit ago. So that moves it forward. Then he makes this whole plan for her, and instead of doing it, she just flirts her way to the top. It seemed like she'd done that once or twice before, so that was a little psycho, too, because sometimes bitches be cray. And then
she's
when
a gypsy.
Yeah, when she finally decides to run and she gets pissed, there was that whole thing where she sees her name on that paper, and she already had seen her name or her face on the paper, so why was that the moment? And when somebody broke into his apartment, she just stood there and watched. She didn't even run then during the pen fight. Everything she did was why this movie happened. If she hadn't, it wouldn't have happened.
You know, when I was watching this movie yesterday, I had this moment where the way that she plays this character, it's endearing, and it's not too much.
Yeah.
Because, like, with someone like that, it's like, oh, like she's like a starstruck lover. Like, she can't help herself. But it seems like in a lot of movies when that happens, it comes off very fake and hollow. In this movie, for some reason, it's believable enough. I like what she does enough. So I can agree with that. I can believe that, I mean, psychotic, I guess you got to be a psycho to do all that stuff.
Well, she's obviously like completely lost in her life and has nothing.
Yeah, she'll do anything.
Gravitates towards this one like dramatic narrative. She's following it because she gets hooked on Jason Bourne, and that's like the only constant is like this one character. He's like this very intense character. She gets hooked onto it. She just falls into the story. But I mean, I guess I don't really argue that she's crazy. I didn't really ever think about it, but. Yeah, I mean, she does have to be pretty crazy to not, like, get the hell away from it immediately.
Absolutely, and he never would have gotten to Paris without her. He wouldn't have been able to do all of these things. And by the way, what did she register her store under that he was so easy to find her? Like, Maurice Scooters? I'm baffled.
He's Jason Bourne.
He's Jason Bourne.
Isn't she supposed to run? Isn't she supposed to not be found? How did he look that up?
He's Jason Bourne, Roxy. He can do anything.
He could find us right now.
Yeah.
She's easily. Psycho. She's a little psycho.
She is. Okay, so of all the Bond, Bourne, Ryan movies, Mission Impossibles that have come out, I kind of negate Mission Impossible because it's always a team of people.
Sure.
That have come out in my lifetime, I believe this is the most well-written of all of them.
This movie. Gilroy's a boss.
Gilroy's a boss. It's believable. It's got enough drama. The dialogue is so clean. It's so tight. Like, between Cooper and Cox.
There's that great exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and everything's believable enough. And I just really like the way they execute all of it. Like, it's just enough action, it's just enough drama, it's just deep enough to where you're invested, but you're not bored.
Yeah.
I just think it's incredibly well written.
No, it's really tightly plotted, I definitely think so. And when you watch this and you compare it to all the things you're talking about, I mean, I'll jump on that and I'll go into mine as well, and we can compare the two because it's pretty related.
Mm-hmm.
What I said is that this, even if they didn't realize it, was the continuation of the Jack Ryan franchise. Because the Ryan franchise was all about this character that was... in the 90s, played by Harrison Ford and once by Alec Baldwin. It was all about this character who was, like, you know, maybe a little morally ambiguous. He played by his own rules for sure, but he had the country's security at heart, and that's what people bought into. But he was, like, this very rogue guy that worked by himself, worked for the CIA, super smart, super capable. And they tried to make a Jack Ryan movie in 02 with Matt Damon's contemporary, Ben Affleck, called The Sum of All Fears, and it was terrible, and nobody wanted to see it. This movie came out the same year, much more intelligent, much, like, darker. And it worked, and it became a franchise. And it was, even though he's an anti-hero who kills people for a living.
Yeah, it's interesting you find that out.
Yeah.
It's like in MacGruber when he tells the story of like when they met, and you find out MacGruber's actually the bad guy in the story.
Right.
It's exactly this.
But like, you don't care. It doesn't make you dislike the character, and he has that superhuman quality that Jack Ryan always had of he can do anything. But it's not like Ethan Hunt or James Bond where he's like a super agent, and he's going to be in a tuxedo with a cigarette or something like that, drinking whiskey. It's like, it's really not that character.
No, it's much more of like the everyman, even though he is a superhuman essentially, but he is more of like the everyman hero.
Absolutely, he opens up to her. He explains. He's kind of like a cool dude. You know, he doesn't have that weird, mysterious facade going on.
I mean, he's very honest about his vulnerability.
Yeah,
and that's what drives that and Marie drive the whole story.
Yeah, I mean, because they try Jack Ryan again with Chris Pine a few years ago. Shadow Recruit
also medium
wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. But there's two more Bourne movies on the horizon: one with Matt Damon and one with Jeremy Renner.
Mm-hmm. Which, so it's interesting about, and since we're going to get into star profiles in a minute, this is something to talk about. You look at Jeremy Renner's career, and you think about The Hurt Locker, and you think about Hawkeye, and him doing
The Town.
He's not, and you look at the numbers, which obviously we'll get into that as well. I think that he is just behind where Matt Damon was to people.
Yeah.
Even though Matt Damon wasn't an action hero yet at all, you look at the numbers and how unsuccessful Legacy was, and you look at how successful Identity was, and they're both at the beginning of their careers, basically, of these becoming massive A-list superstars. It's interesting that Renner's star is not shining as bright.
I don't know if he's behind, because he's got a lot of TV creds, too. He's got a lot of fans out there, and he's reached a lot of different audiences, and I feel like Matt had... Yeah, he had done Goodwill, and he had done his action movies, but I think they're pretty much on the same level. I think this is going to really kickstart.
I honestly thought that Renner was ahead of Damon.
Oh, but I thought you were saying
he was behind. No, he is, because when you look at the numbers, people did not go watch Jeremy Renner as Jason Bourne.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be for any number of factors, but let's get into star profiles in 1 second here. I do want to get Fist Pump moment out of the way, just so we can talk about the moments that we think are the absolute most awesome in this movie. So as we said, guys, Fist Pump moment is that moment when you're watching the movie and you just, your head kind of wants to explode. You have kind of a silent, like, yes, this is sweet, and you want to share it with someone, even if you don't get to, even if you don't even make a sound. It's just like a trigger in your head. So what was it for you guys? What's that moment?
For me, it was when he was asleep on the bench and the cops come over and he, like that second he grabs the pipe and you look at his face and he's like,
holy crap.
I didn't know what I was about to do. Yeah. Holy, that to me was like, yes, we're starting so strong.
And it's so funny you say that, right? Because when you think about watching this movie the first time, this is one of those movies where because it is a little bit of a thriller, it's a bit of a mystery and you don't know what's going on at first. I remember that happening in theaters when I watched it the first time, and you're so charged, you're so excited.
Well, you have no idea what this dude is capable of. And then it goes into the bank, and then the embassy scene shortly thereafter, and you're like, okay, did you see what he just did to those cops?
Right.
Now the alarm's going off. What
What's
the
he gonna
hell
do now?
Is about to happen? But absolutely. Whatever it is, it's going to be awesome.
Can you imagine reading the script? I'll bet you reading the script before the movie got made, you would be so engaged so fast. Because Gilroy's a great writer, so it's paced very well. And the stuff at the beginning with him on the boat and finding the thing in his neck and the like, you're like, oh, this is interesting. It's a cool, who is this guy? And then he does the thing on the bench. You're probably like, God, what is going to happen next?
It's different. The first time going through this, you're like, oh my gosh, I really didn't know he was about to regain that memory or that muscle memory. So cool. And I loved his facial expression. And also, I just hated those cops.
Yeah.
He was asleep on a bench. Leave him alone.
Yeah,
leave him alone. He's not doing anything.
I love when he also, they say something and he starts speaking to him, I think, in Dutch. And there's also that kind of look on his face like, okay, I'm speaking Dutch now.
Yeah,
he does that like a few times in the movie where he just starts speaking another language. And you're like, okay, awesome.
If you could be Treadstone, like if you could go through the training program, would you do it?
I mean,
for $30 million, it seems like that's what the...
Like you'd be able to
I feel
speak
like I've already kind of gone through it.
Like you get to speak 70 languages. You are a lethal weapon. You're deadly. Yeah. You can like kill anyone. You can run flat out for a half mile before your hands start shaking. Like,
yeah. I think I get too attached to people to become a rogue agent.
Yeah, probably true.
Oh,
I like friends.
I would kick ass.
As a rogue agent?
I just told you you described my life. Yeah, I could do it.
Have you people seen this jacket?
Yeah, I work out, you know.
What's your fist pump moment? I have a couple, and I don't want to steal one from you, so I think I'm going to go with the other one.
Okay.
But you're trying to guess his, so you're going to go with the other?
Well, yeah, we happen to hang out sometimes. Watch movies together sometimes, like these movies.
The pen fight.
Yeah, the pen fight's great.
The pen fight moment is one of those things where you're like, okay, this dude is such a badass. And then this guy is also a Treadstone agent.
Right.
An assassin. And you see him, he's got the knife, and they're fighting. He keeps trying to get the knife out of his hand. He's like, okay, what? And he just grabs his pen. And you see him, like, put the pen down by his side.
Yeah.
And you're like, he is going to destroy someone with that pen. I don't know how he's going to do it, but it's going to be sweet. And then you kind of hear, like, the... You know, and you hear the guy kind of, like, groan. And then he stands up. He's got, like, six pen holes in him.
Right.
And he pulls it out of his hand.
Oh,
so awesome.
Yeah, super gnarly. Can we talk about for a second how 90s Euro that guy is, by the way?
Everyone's so 90s
he's got,
Euro.
Like, he's got, like, the X on his shirt. And he's got, like, the dyed blonde hair. He looks like he's supposed to be, like, a discotheque.
Right.
Drinking, like, Smirnoff Ice or something like that.
5 o'clock shadow.
And then he pool dives out of the window. And you're like, absolutely he was.
Yeah.
My only problem with that fist bump moment is that my fist had to leave when... We finally go downstairs and we see that this woman is dead, but he had come through the window. It was such a weird thing.
Maybe he went through.
Like he went through the house.
And cleared it first.
I don't know. That was bizarre. Yeah. If you're going to break through the window, how long have you been standing in that window? How did you go kill that woman? So I was like, and then I was like,
Probably like went downstairs, killed her, scaled the wall.
Yeah. I like Marie's response. She's like, sure. Yeah, sure. He went out the window. Why would someone do that?
Out the window. Yeah.
Psychotic. Totally psycho.
My fist bump is when they go to her stepbrother's house and he's like, with the dog's gone, does that ever happen? And he's like, no, never. He'd never miss a meal. Always something, right? And it's like, pause. And like Damon looks at him and he's like, get in the basement.
Get in the basement now.
That's my favorite line in the whole movie. I mean, it's not my favorite line, but it's my favorite moment. Just because...
Your family are in danger. Get in the basement.
And I love it because she knows. Marie's like, do what he says. Trust me. He's like, I'm sorry. You're in danger. Get in the basement. And I love that he just takes him like 18 seconds to find the shells, to find the gun.
Yeah.
Amazing moment.
Yeah. And he goes out in the woods. I love it. This is it's the only thing I remember from watching it as a kid the most is he shoots in the air and the birds fly off and Clive Owen's out and like, you're like, you're done, dude. He's going to take you out.
Yeah.
Like he's got you. And he hits them the once and then he starts to crawl away and he turns. He just point blank shotgun.
Yeah. It's amazing because he's got this highly sophisticated sniper rifle, handgun. He's got the positioning on him. He's hiding in a field, and Damon hunts him down with a rusty old double barrel shotgun.
Doesn't even take him a second.
Not even a second.
Incredible moment too, as he's sitting there. This is what we do. We work alone. All yeah. that. That whole scene was great.
What are you, Paris? Yeah. For what yeah. are you? Right. He's like Paris, Germany, whatever.
Right. This is where I actually would be bad at this though, because I was still, while he's outside doing all this and everything awesome is going on, I'm still thinking, the poor dad and kids.
Right.
In the basement. You don't want to look like that guy to your kids. And that's what I'm sitting here feeling all emotional. I can't even concentrate on the action.
It's not talking about the dog. It's National Dog Day today.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Dog's gone. Sorry, dog.
I know. That was really sad.
My other fist pump moment was when he looks over and they're about to do the car chase scene. And he's telling her, he's like, you need to go. You need to leave. This is it. And he goes, this is the last chance.
Yeah.
And she just buckles her seatbelt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awesome.
You think she might reach for the door? And
yeah.
Then-
It's a good one.
Great.
Yeah, definitely. All right,
that was
excellent.
More like a gun noise. It meant to be a seatbelt.
She puts on her seatbelt.
The seatbelts in my car have like a special sound effect. When I click it, it's like...
Yeah.
It's the car
really
I bought.
Good.
Me
yeah.
too.
Customize it at the Honda dealership.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Dodge Neon.
I'd have a Dodge Stratus. All right, guys. So that's our fist bump moments. Let's talk star profiles a little bit. So we started to get into this a little bit with Matt Damon. We went with Damon and Chris Cooper for these. And you could have gone... Franca. I didn't write her last name down. Franca.
I have it.
Keep talking.
Potente.
Franca Potente. Yeah, exactly.
So, thank you, Marissa.
We'll give her a quick honorable mention before we get into Cooper and Cooper and Damon. But the reason that we decided not to go with her is because essentially she's Run Lola Run. She's Run Lola Run, and she's Marie from Born Identity. Mm-hmm. And in another country, she's obviously more popular than that. But as far as American audiences go, that's what she's recognized for. And the reason she's in this movie is because of Run Lola Run.
Right.
That's part of why this movie was even made, was because of Run Lola Run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Doug Liman wanted to make a movie that was inspired by that. Yep. So he started to adapt the famous novel. And so I just didn't feel like it was particularly relevant. She still works, by the way, a ton. She works in television. She's still relevant.
She's absolutely a working actress. She just isn't as big of a star profile, doesn't have a bigger profile as Matt and Chris do.
Yeah, and Cooper,
the movies
at the time,
that Cooper has been in, is
and
just
that was
absurd.
That was like the apex too. That was like the best. So let's start with Matt Damon. So Matt Damon, 98, right? He does Good Will Hunting, gets on everybody's radar. He and Affleck, and then the next few years, he's it's a fantastic movie. He's trying to establish himself as an A-lister. So you know, you've got Talented Mr. Ripley in 99, which he's really great in.
Mm-hmm. They made
a lot of money, actually.
Yeah, and I actually kind of feel like prepped him for this role.
Yeah,
a little bit, and it's still probably his best role, honestly, dramatically. Like, it's still...
No, dude. Good Will Hunting is better.
That's fair.
I agree, but completely different.
Yeah, it's actually... Because Good Will Hunting, when you watch it, you're like, is this kid just a kid from Boston playing a kid from Boston?
Right.
You know,
right,
it's not
right.
the same as this, but, you know.
That's totally fair, yeah. I mean, I could go another
speaking, yeah.
But Ripley's a great role. And in terms of, like, depth and everything, dramatic depth, it's the one that he tackles that I still think he executes the most masterfully. It's a weirder character, so... All the Pretty Horses, obviously, it's a star vehicle. It's a book adaptation. Penelope Cruz, she's in her prime as well. Didn't really hit. Nobody really liked it. It wasn't like a very well-received movie. I've seen portions of it on television a bunch of times. I've never really wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
And then in Ocean's 11 in 01, which
I love this movie.
Well, so it's Ocean's great. 11 is really the one... That's the movie even before this that was like, this guy's a total A-lister. Because Good Will Hunting, nobody knew who he was before that. But when you're next to Brad Pitt and George Clooney...
And you're holding your own.
And we saw that movie in theaters. That was like the movie.
Yeah.
It was the movie.
Absolutely. That entire cast. If you're in that movie, you know you've made it to a certain extent. And I just feel like Matt Damon, a lot of times in the conversation, he does get missed. He does get skipped over. And this was like, all right, we're not skipping over him anymore.
Yeah.
He's the dude.
Yeah.
So what's really interesting about that is if you look at Affleck the previous few years, just a quick comparison, you know, he had done Pearl Harbor, right? He had done Armageddon. He was working, I would say in some ways he was a bit more of a commercial A-lister.
Well, it looked like he was going to just go through the roof. Like he was just going to be the man of the duo.
And for a few years there, he kind of was. I mean, Pearl Harbor is a massive movie. Huge.
It's so funny how with their careers going up and down, people always reference Good Will Hunting and who was the smarter one who actually wrote it, blah, blah, blah. And it was like for the longest time when Affleck did Geely and Some of All Fears and Changing Lands, they're like, okay, well, that guy's... They even like made fun of him on South Park.
Right.
And, I mean, on Family Guy and just called him a moron, essentially.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Gone Baby Gone, The Town,
you
know, the Argo. You're like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
Swung back around a little bit, for sure.
Quite a bit.
So, yeah... Ocean's 11, and then he follows it up with Bourne. And Bourne's totally unexpected, really, career-wise. It wasn't, like, the turn that I think most people expected to see out of Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't want him to be cast in the first place because they felt like he had such a baby face for this role. And he was very young.
He does. When you see those pictures on his passport, you're like, oh my God, dude, you're so young.
Exactly. Yeah. And as we get into more of the movies, he does bulk up a little bit and he becomes less baby face. But how did you guys feel about his casting in this?
Well, I mean, he's obviously great. It, you know, with the roles offered to a handful of different guys, Sylvester Stallone being one of them, Brad Pitt
being one of them, yeah.
Guys that turned it down. You know, I mean, I think it's fitting because Doug Liman had never done an action film, you know, and we'll talk about director in a second, but Liman was really a drama guy. So for him to cast Damon at the point that he was in his career, I think does make sense to take
what
a chance.
I like about Matt Damon in this role, and I don't know how much this went into casting, is you look at him and he's non-threatening. He doesn't look like that suave, smooth, like, I'm going to kick your ass guy. He looks like a baby-faced kid. You see this guy walk through security, you're like, yeah, whatever. This guy couldn't do anything.
Right.
You know? And he looks like he's like 12. So, I mean, I don't know how much that played in the actual casting of the movie, but the fact that he looks the part to not be threatening, to be a super assassin, I think it's perfect.
And then to make his actions believable, which they were.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he was adamant about doing all the training and being and doing his own fights and most of his stunts, not like the driving and things like that, but most of the fights he did do.
He took the driving classes, too. He started taking a bunch of different taking lessons everywhere. So, yeah, props to him.
Trained for like 3 months for it.
That's like your guy Cruz. He's always driving and taking lessons and stuff, you know?
We can't compare anybody to Cruz. Nobody compares.
I think you can.
But,
yeah, I'm pretty sure you can.
But, yeah, so O2 and then going forward from this, you'd think that he blew up immediately after this, that he was like the guy that we know Matt Damon to be now, but it actually took a few years still, because the next 5 years up until he did Ultimatum, the third in the franchise, he really wasn't in much. I mean, he was in some bad movies. I believe Stuck on You was in the next couple years.
Is that movie bad?
But, you know, 07 was like Syriana, and then it's those movies the years after that, the ones that really, I guess, the kind of roles he was getting. A movie like Invictus is a great example of the kind of thing where you're like, yeah, okay, a Clint Eastwood movie starring Morgan Freeman. It's a biopic. He's doing an accent, right?
He's doing an accent.
It's just a different kind of movie.
Yeah.
Oscar bait. Exactly. So
call that.
So now let's get into Chris Cooper. Unless you guys have anything else you want to say about Matt Damon.
I want to be Chris Cooper's career.
He's so awesome. And this time period, like, we'll reference the three most relevant prior. American Beauty, 99. I think we all know that role.
Yeah.
Me, Myself, and Irene in 2000, a movie that I've still never seen, which is funny because...
You've never seen it?
That movie's hilarious.
Yeah, I should.
It's so
We'll get on that.
It's Fairly Brothers. I love it. The Patriot, another movie I've never seen, oddly enough.
Again, love that movie.
Great movie.
But people do like it. And then the same year, but it came out the next, it came out in 03 actually, in January or February, was Adaptation.
Yes.
Which I think he won an Oscar for it.
Yes.
Which is an incredible role.
And an incredible movie.
Yeah. And in some ways, I wish that he hadn't died at the end of this movie, because I wish that he had shown back up in the later films.
Yeah, like instead of bringing Landy back, and instead of bringing that other Weasley guy back, like they do from Ultimatum to Legacy and Supremacy Ultimatum, I wish Chris Cooper would stay in this franchise.
I couldn't agree more, and I found it incredibly anticlimactic the way that they killed him in this movie.
At least have Bourne kill him.
Right.
You know?
It just kind of happened, and you're left sitting there feeling, what did I just miss? How did that just happen?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the big bad or whatever, and then he's on our team, and I feel like there wasn't closure. If this hadn't gotten a sequel, that to me would have been a huge disaster because I wouldn't have known what happened with him. He's so great. He is a character actor. He's so strong. Every time he's in a movie, I'm like, okay, I can breathe easy knowing that you're going to just knock this out of the park and I don't have to worry. I don't have to sit there wondering if he'll do okay. He's really talented.
And don't get me wrong, I love Brian Cox.
Yeah.
You find out that he's the one that orchestrated it and he's the bad guy in number two. But if the two of them were together still, it'd be great. But, you know, I'm going to go back to one of our rules when we talk about how the hero and villain are always the smartest people in the room. Do you really feel at any point that Chris Cooper is the smartest person in the room? Or do you feel like he's just trying to play catch up the whole movie? But I feel like no matter what, when you're fighting Jason Bourne, you're trying to play catch up.
Well, so that actually speaks to an interesting point of the writing, because we mentioned the scene when we were watching it where he's on the bridge and he says, you know, the bridge, whatever, Pont Neuf or something like that.
Face east,
come alone.
Take your jacket off.
Cooper shows up and, you know, he's like, I thought I told you to come alone. Now I'm gone.
Yeah.
And Cooper's like, we blew it. It's like, how did you not see that coming? Of course he was going to know you weren't alone. He knows more than you. Like, why would you think that you could bring people and he wouldn't see it?
Right.
Also, if you're planning on bringing people and you're facing east and you know exactly what this space looks like, then have your people try to locate where he could see you from if you're facing east.
Don't have them standing next to you on the bridge. Like, he's just going to walk up to you and be like, hey, I'm Jason Bourne.
Right.
Like, people so obvious. And they were so obvious when they're standing outside the hotel, too.
Yeah.
Everybody, get your cops in line. Get your whatever it is. Get your people to be less obvious. This is Jason Bourne.
I mean, so the argument you could make is that who's smarter than Chris Cooper? And the answer is it's the other agents. It's the other agents that come after Bourne. In theory, they're smarter because they're Treadstone agents.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're still villains. So the hero and the villain still are the smartest people in the room. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of who the real villain
is. He's still the smartest person in the room. If they're in a room together, he's going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's if we're necessarily calling him the villain of this movie, because I feel like the villain could be the government or whatever you want to call it. So,
which is why the rules are loose. Yeah. Which is why we say
I really don't think the rules are that loose on this. I was just wondering what your guys' opinion was on whether or not Cooper is... Is he just playing catch up?
It feels stupid that scene on the bridge is the one that points out to me as like, you're an idiot. Like, how would you really expect to get away with this?
But Bourne certainly is the smartest person in the room.
Yeah. Of course.
Okay.
All right. So that pretty much does it for Chris Cooper. Let's talk about production development, how this movie got made, some of the people involved. So we keep mentioning Doug Liman, and we incidentally actually talked about Liman with you on Edge of Tomorrow.
Which is another one of my favorite action movies.
It's a great movie. Yeah.
The dude knows what he's doing.
Yeah, from what I hear about the guy, he's a little bit neurotic. This is like what you read about him.
Mm-hmm.
He's very particular about the way that he wants his movies made, his communication with the studio and everything like that. You read about him and he's one of these people who it's like, this is my vision, this is my movie, I want this shot, it needs to be like this.
Great.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that he constantly finds himself right behind the camera, not looking at a monitor, holding the camera so that he's right there with his actors, he's right there with the crew, and everything is done exactly the way that he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he directed Swingers, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then Go, and then I think there's one other movie before he did this.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first movie that he ever made like this, right?
Yeah.
And there's the famous part that you read about in production when he's working on this, and somebody's like yelling at him, and they're like, or is that Edge of Tomorrow?
That was Edge of Tomorrow.
There's like, I've never made a movie like this before. Yeah. He's like, neither have I. And everybody went quiet.
Yeah, it was him and Blunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she was in the
She's like, I've never done this before. He's like, me neither. Yeah. You know?
I love it. I think that you're exactly right, though. He is neurotic, and he's all of these things, and that's what every great director should be.
Exactly.
You should care that much. You should have say in how it turns out. That if you're not doing that, you're not a great director.
Right.
I love him. I think he kicks butt.
Yeah, he's definitely one of these guys where the movies of his that aren't as good, I don't feel like I blame him as much as I like a movie like Jumper, for instance, which I don't like. I think that movie sucks. But
not a very good movie.
But it's you watch that movie and you're kind of like, I wonder how much of this is your fault and how much of it is the fault of the writing and the studio and the fact that you had this Hayden Christensen vehicle you were trying to make work. I know you love Hayden Christensen. Oh my god,
don't get me started.
Movie, by the way, is called Outcast, I believe, with Nicolas Cage and Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, I thought it'd be really funny to watch it the other day. I watched about
me too.
12 minutes
really?
Of it.
I turned it on for about 20 minutes.
Couldn't
are you
do
best
it.
Best friends or something?
I just couldn't. Well,
it's because when the trailer came out, if any of you guys find Nicolas Cage to be as awesome,
the blood we spill would be on our blades.
I am the White Ghost. Look up the trailer for Outcast. Watch it. You'll lose your shit. It's funny.
The worst.
When I found the trailer, I wouldn't even tell Andrew what he was watching. I made him watch it because the first time you see Cage and he says, "I am the White Ghost," he basically fell out of his chair.
Laughing. You lose it.
Yeah.
Is incredible. That your fist pump moment of the trailer?
It's got to be.
Easy. Yeah. Easy. So Liman is a guy. He's got a film coming out called Mena with Tom Cruise next
Shocker.
Year
mm-hmm.
that is supposed to be awesome.
I can't wait. Yeah, I think it'll be amazing.
Looks like it's a drama. It's got the kid from Ex Machina in it. It's got Cruise. He's like a drug running helicopter pilot.
Something like that,
Deep South in the 80s. I have faith. I think that's pretty cool. Definitely, he's involved with Hypnotic Productions. It's his production company that started in the early 2000s, and that they're usually involved with the films that he produces.
Mm-hmm.
He also produced some of the OC.
Yes.
The television show.
He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is great.
Which is awesome. But he's definitely a winner. So
I have a soft spot for the OC.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah, seriously.
What was that?
I love the OC.
I
just have been hearing about Ben rave about this show for
You never saw it?
Three and a half years. Of course I saw it. It's not a good show. All right. Anyway, moving on.
This
I don't want to get
very good show.
Stabbed here between the two of my co-hosts.
So a couple interesting things here. So this, The Bourne Identity was originally a spy thriller drama. Yep. And it's referenced by a lot of people as like one of the definitive spy dramas or novels in the history ever written, right? 1980, mm-hmm. Robert Ludlum. He wrote three of them, 1980, I believe, one in 86 and one in 1990. And that was the first three film titles, The Identity, Supremacy, and Ultimatum.
Right.
Now, the only one that has any relevance to the book
is this one.
Is Identity. Yeah. And there's a lot of elements that are close, but there's a lot of stuff that was rewritten. Originally, this was made into a TV movie in 1988 starring Richard Chamberlain. Okay. It was like a 4-hour miniseries.
Yeah.
And it's very close to the book, and it's very bad.
It's very bad. Right. We watched some of it, and it was not cool.
They needed to change it because it was written during the Cold War, and it was no longer relevant to people, and people couldn't connect with it. And they were trying to keep it as close to it as they could, but they just it wasn't working out.
Yeah.
So they made the necessary changes. I think that anybody who faults them for that doesn't see this as its own entity, as you should. Every book is different than the movie should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if this movie... Again, it came out almost 20 years after the book was written. Or right. Did you say it was 80? It was 80. Yeah, so it was 22 years afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have the same issues
right.
in something that happened 22 years later.
No.
You know?
So one of the things I thought is the coolest, is so Lyman wanted to adapt the novel, right? And he was inspired by Run, Lola, Run, which came out in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted that tone. And he started working with Tony Gilroy to adapt the novel, but he changed a lot of it, and a lot of it was based on his personal experience because his father was in the NSA.
Yeah.
So a lot of the characters in here are based on like real characters and his dad
mm-hmm.
And his experience in the Iran-Contra affair, which is really interesting.
Why I bet it's so well written and so well executed. Like the two of them collaborating on the script and him directing it, it just feels real. Everything feels real.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. So the movie took a few years to get made. He was working on developing the script. They brought in another writer named Dan Heron.
Blake. And this is really exciting for me.
William Blake Heron.
This was very exciting for me because I am the most massive Role Models fan.
Oh, yeah. I know.
It's so good. Telling you guys that it's my favorite comedy, I'm not kidding. I love that movie so much.
Really?
It's one of like four movies that I have.
Venti.
Yeah. I can quote every single line from it. I love that movie so much. When I didn't even know that this is something that he had worked on because mm-hmm. why on earth would you ever assume that this is something that he worked on?
Yeah.
It is so weird. Same thing with somebody who directs Swingers in this. It's crazy how people can have polar personalities. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Heron's a guy who basically his two relevant credits are Bourne Identity and Role Models.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the second writer that the studio brought in once they acquired the rights. Warner Brothers, I think, spent like 2 years trying to get the rights to this. And once they acquired it, they brought in Heron to rewrite Gilroy and Lyman's script.
Yeah.
So he gets a credit as a rewrite guy.
Which he's also known for doing that a lot in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I need him to just do so many other things.
Go
have lunch with me or something.
One thing that they changed
on
from the
record.
Original... Yeah, you heard it. One thing that they changed from the book that I wish they wouldn't have is because I don't know what it is, but I love when the hero gets... repair or like gets worked on and like goes through therapy with an alcoholic doctor off in some random island.
Okay.
Because that's what was in the original book.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I love that exchange that happens when it's like an alcoholic doctor that's like a vagabond is going to take care of me and teach me the ways of the world and heal me.
I wanted that
in this movie.
That sounds like it.
In life, if you can't help yourself, sometimes you just help others.
Yeah. That's like one of the cutscenes from MacGruber, actually.
Yeah, right.
Should be. All right, so that's Lyman. That's some of the so with Tony Gilroy, I have a soft spot for Tony Gilroy, and I've been talking about this guy for years because mm-hmm. Michael Clayton is one of my favorite movies ever made. I don't know if you guys have seen this film. It's absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He have you seen that movie, Andrew?
You know, I'll get around to it one day.
So he's a guy who got a lot of credit for. I mean, he was a rewrite guy as well in the late 90s. His dad is like a super, super famous playwright and screenwriter,
mm-hmm.
Pulitzer Prize winner Frank D. Gilroy. No movie credits that are relevant to our purposes here.
He
on
has
this show.
Some, but they're just really not.
There's older.
Anything crazy to talk about.
Older. I mean, it's possible they're great movies. You know, he was nominated for awards, just not stuff that I've seen, and they were in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And so anyway. Tony did some stuff in the late 90s, like The Devil's Advocate, Armageddon, but he was obviously a friend of Lyman's, and they worked on this film together. Now, once this movie got made, he worked on production and co-writing on the rest of the films in the franchise.
Yeah.
And finally, in 07, made Michael Clayton, which got 5 Oscar nominations, including a writing nomination, directing nomination, and it was his directorial debut, plus 3 acting nominations, which are all amazing. Yes. You guys should all see that movie if you haven't seen it. But weirdly enough, 2 years later, he made Duplicity, which was kind of like an espionage comedy with Paul Giamatti and Tom Wilkinson and Clive Owen and Julia Roberts. And
what, did you not like the movie? Is that why you have the face?
Well, no. So I saw it in theaters, obviously. I was very excited about it.
It's all right.
It's just okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's good.
It's like entertaining.
Yeah. Well, it's like where the D goes up and good. Just good.
It's good. Yeah.
Well, it's one of those weird examples of if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes ratings on it, the user reviews gave it a 37%.
Right.
And the critics like 70 give it like a 67.
Yeah.
So it's one of those movies where like the critics are like, well, it's pretty smart. We'll give it a higher grade. And the users are just like, this movie sucks. What a
fun to
this.
Watch. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it a couple times and I've seen it twice and I remember very little about it. And I feel like that speaks a lot to a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible. It seems almost impossible for a movie with a cast that good to be not at least entertaining. And it's just, you know.
And then he went on to do State of Play and then Bourne Legacy.
State of Play is well written.
Yeah.
That movie's...
So is Bourne Legacy, honestly. Yeah. Like, I watched it last night. I actually hadn't seen it yet. And I was like, I need to watch this movie.
Ooh.
I know. I was shocked, especially because I love Jeremy Renner. I love the series.
Have you seen all the other Bournes?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It is actually very well written, and the acting is very good in it. It's just not quite the same. I don't know how to explain it, but you can definitely feel that he had his finger in the writing.
Yeah, the only examples I can think of where I'm going to give a writer 100% credit for what you see on the screen is if it's like they wrote the script, they're working with the same director, and it's like some sort of auteur where they get complete control, and the studio has very very little say.
Well, you saw what happened when he wrote and directed a movie,
right?
You know.
So it's, yeah, I mean, sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. So if you write something and someone else directs it, I mean, you just never know. But
of course, it's hard to place blame on anything when you're not there and you can't tell.
Yeah.
But as far as Gilroy goes in general, I think the guy's a friggin' genius. And the kind of stuff that he writes is just, it's super tight. You know, it's just the plotting is always very sound.
I wish he wrote more.
Yeah, me too. He's got a couple things coming out.
Yeah.
With some good actors involved, I think. Willem Dafoe.
High Wire Act and The Great Wall.
Yeah, exactly. So that should be pretty cool stuff.
High Wire Act, is that the Joseph Gordon-Levitt one where the tightrope?
No.
I don't think so.
That looks insane.
Which one? What is that called? Cool.
I do know what you call it, what you're talking about. I saw the preview for it the other day. It made me nauseous.
Yeah, because a little bit.
Heights and me, we don't get along.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Didn't know that.
I'll teach you my ways.
Wear the jacket.
So quickly before we get into our critical and budget, I want to talk just a little bit of the producers. We don't have to harp on them too much.
Talk about Frank Marshall.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Lyman and Hypnotic, they produce half his movies, or several, a lot of the movies that he works on. But Frank Marshall is one of these guys. Have you ever heard of Kennedy Marshall? That's his company, or with Kathleen Kennedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between the two of them, I mean, the kind of things they've worked on, it's absurd.
Like, just a few to mention.
Yeah, just some franchises that he was entirely involved in. Indiana Jones, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, the entire Bourne franchise, a couple other things here and there.
You know, just a few movies you guys might enjoy if you like our show.
He's like one of the 50 most relevant producers in the history of Hollywood.
He absolutely is. Him, Bruce Berman.
Well, I'm glad that he was helping to produce this because I think he did a great job.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, he did. And he did a good job with the whole series. It's crazy when a series comes out and it progressively does better at the box office. And we're going to get into that in a minute. But that doesn't happen a lot.
No, not very often at all.
Furious 7.
Furious 7. Yeah, we were looking at like the highest grossing films worldwide all time. Do you guys realize that 3 of the top 6 highest grossing films ever came out this summer?
Yeah, absolutely insane.
It's insanity.
Avengers 2, Jurassic World, and
Furious 7.
Furious 7 all are in like the $1.4, $1.5, $6 billion mark.
And then over here you have James Cameron just like, yeah, kiddies, I get you.
Yeah, he's like
doing well, I guess.
He's like, I got a 2.8 and a 2.6.
Wait till Star Wars comes out.
That's going to destroy every record.
Yeah, I think it'll be number 3. I'm pretty sure it'll be Jurassic.
I think it might go number 2 all time.
It's just hard to imagine a movie.
Titanic was in theaters for like 7 years, it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, Avatar Worldwide was out for quite a while.
Yeah.
So I guess you could see Episode 7, if it's as good as I'm hoping and I think it's going to be, I mean, maybe.
Even if it's not as good as you want it to be, everyone's going to go see that movie.
And if you want to know more about it, check out Jedi Alliance on popcorn.network.
Are you on that show?
No, but I was one time on it, and it actually was the reason that we couldn't go live for a really long time here, because it shut down the network because Lego striked against us.
Oh, yeah.
You should have been like, because it went so massive because and viral. Exactly. Broke the internet.
It got a lot of hits. It did. But I'm a big Star Wars fan. Anyway.
All right. Let's move on to money.
Yeah, let's talk about money. You want to leave this one?
Sure. So it was distributed by Universal. It cost $60 million to make, but then they went over budget, $8 million for a total of $68 million. Obviously, you can do math. It made a lot of money, you know, for what it is. You know, it got 121 domestic,
yep,
92 foreign, and
right,
214 worldwide. So definitely, it almost, you know, it almost quadrupled its budget.
Yeah.
Almost.
Back in 02. 214 back in 02 is a big number.
It's very big. Yeah. I mean, it's funny that this movie... It opened, its biggest competition was Scooby-Doo opening weekend, and Scooby-Doo doubled its profit.
Crushed it.
Yeah.
Like, literally doubled the profit.
I don't think it was expecting to do as well as it did. I don't think they actually thought the movie was going to be as good as it was. And it isn't until afterwards when we see the cast of it, they're all talking on the red carpet, the director, and they're like, all right, well, when we do our sequel, and everybody's like, what do you mean? We haven't even seen this yet. But they could tell that they had a hit on their hands.
Yeah.
So I think it did better than they thought, even though it didn't do as well as Scooby-Doo. In all fairness, I'm also a big Scooby-Doo girl.
Yeah, so. We all love Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
Roxy, I think you love every movie that's ever been made.
I like Amazing Spider-Man 2, so, you know, it's hard to say.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 also. I did. So, I actually liked the Amazing Man.
I'm, like, waiting for you to be like, I hate that movie.
It's a Million Ways to Die in the West.
All right.
Cool. I haven't seen it.
Damn.
That movie was awful. It was so bad. Fantastic Four. Horrible.
All right, let's move on.
Another one, it also opened against Windtalkers. Windtalkers was number three.
That's a great movie.
I actually really liked
one
that movie.
One of those early 2000s war movies.
I was also a kid, you know, and it seemed like super cool, and the Navajo code and all that.
Right.
But Windtalkers kind of got demolished at the box office.
Do you remember that whole, like, the whole little cluster of war movies that came out?
Yeah, it was
We Were Soldiers, Windtalkers, Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
Yeah.
Like, there was a fourth one.
The Bruce Willis one.
Yeah.
What's it called?
You guys are like this on me right now.
Yeah.
Same mine, though.
Hearts War.
That's
yes.
The one. Yep.
Don't you love that feeling?
Bump it. Okay.
Good for you.
So we got this graphic up here of the Bourne series and the money that they made. And this is what we were talking about earlier. Is you look at it progressively, every single one made quite a bit, substantially. I mean, 1 to 2 is massive. That's a $60 million increase.
Right.
And 2 to 3 is, you know, $38 million, which is still fantastic. And then you look at 4. And this is adjusted for inflation, so it probably made more than Bourne Identity in actual numbers.
Right.
But when you look at it, it just completely tanked compared to the series. Like, very rarely do you go from making better and better and better. Like, again, we talked about Furious. And then the fourth movie, which is getting rebooted with a great actor.
Yeah.
The same writer, same feel, and it's at a good time, and it just tanked, essentially.
Well, so this asks the question, right? So we talk, what I mentioned about how this is the continuation of the Jack Ryan franchise, even if they didn't know it, and it definitely feels that way. By the third movie, when he's, like, in control and you know the character you're dealing with,
right?
It's fully that. It's not like he's this anti-hero and you're still a mystery. It's like...
No, he's Jason Bourne.
It's just Jason Bourne doing awesome shit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you wonder if 5 years later, now, you know, we're 10 years after this thing had started, are people over it? Like, are they sort of like, look, Matt Damon was this guy... I don't need Jason Bourne as a character.
Yes.
It's played by Jeremy Renner.
Yes, they were.
We need a new thing.
Because you and I love this series, and we both hadn't seen the movie, and I watched it last night because of the show.
I just didn't care.
And I love Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
I don't think that's it. I just think that it lost its momentum a little bit, and then there was some stink on this movie going into it, and the whole fact that it was Jeremy Renner, and I don't know if people were upset about that or whether they just really loved their Matt Damon. I don't know. I think that it will do better. He'll do better next time. I liked the movie. I really did. It wasn't like people walked out of that and were like, this is the worst movie ever. Didn't get the same numbers.
It was very good. It was very good. And I think part of it could be is when people start to run their course as a character, you get happy when they're replaced. Like, Pierce Brosnan ran his course as Bond. And when Daniel Craig came on, it was fantastic. Because Pierce Brosnan was what you wanted out of Bond in that era. You wanted it to be smooth, and you wanted his one-liners, and they were like action comedies almost. You know what I mean? Like, not
by today's standards, if you go watch those movies, GoldenEye is a huge demon pile of shit.
And GoldenEye, when we were growing up, was like, oh my god, GoldenEye is so sweet. I want a clicky top pen just so I can click it 3 times and think it's going to explode.
Right.
Like, that's how good it was. And yes, Yes, Miss Rocks, you got something to say about that?
No, I really don't.
She was charmed by what she just said.
I was.
And then Daniel Craig came along, and you're like, okay, this is what we want. This is the smooth, badass. Like he's not. He doesn't have as many of the one-liners, but he delivers the ones he does have. He delivers with more conviction and they're more serious. Matt Damon wasn't at the end of his rope yet.
No.
You could have had a couple more Bourne movies with him in it. And that's why they're going to have another one with him in it.
Right.
But it's weird. How do you have two Bourne series going at once? They'll probably, like, interlock.
We should probably announce that, like, realistically, we looked at Frank Marshall's producing credits for Announced and in pre-production, and they're both listed as Untitled Jeremy Renner Bourne Project.
Right,
Untitled,
exactly.
Matt Damon Bourne Project. I mean, by contrast, if you look at Tom Cruise's in pre-production, you have Top Gun 2. You have these movies that you're like, is that really going to happen still? I don't know if they're going to make that movie. And they might, but I don't know if I'm going to say, like, on air right now. I guarantee that you see two more Bourne movies, one each with both those guys.
It just seems so weird. It doesn't seem fitting.
Yeah.
I definitely think that we're going to see a Jeremy Renner Bourne movie.
I think we will, too. And maybe Matt Damon will be in it.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But I think that might be why 4 did not do well as well as the other ones, is because as an audience, especially for me, I was like, I could have seen more Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I didn't think he ran this character to the ground yet.
So let's jump really quickly into critical, and then I do want to talk about ultimate action scenes. So, you know, there's a couple of reviews we pulled here, right? Mm-hmm. You have a positive and a negative, right?
Always.
So Ebert says, Doug Lyman, director of The Bourne, directs the traffic well, gets a nice wintry look from his locations, absorbs us with the movie's spycraft, and uses Damon's ability to be focused and sincere. I'd say pretty accurate.
Yeah, because the setting of this movie is great.
Yeah.
Like, the feel of where you are. And we talk about... We had a discussion about this yesterday when we were watching it. And sorry to leave you out, Rox.
That's okay. I'm here now. I'm part of the discussion now.
You were invited.
In this era, in the early 2000s, there was something so mysterious and engaging about, like, European cityscape.
Yeah.
You know, like, people just, like, people from the Midwest, people from where I grew up in the Northwest, like, you don't know what it's like there. So to hold a spy movie there was like, ooh.
Right.
It's even more, like, exotic, I guess.
Totally. And I was, yeah, I agree with you completely. It's like, the tone of everything, it's like, the, you know, all like the it's just like a Dutch bank, or like a super fast train,
mm-hmm.
or like this
driving
cabin
on the left side of the road,
this cabin in the French Alps, or it's not really, but I mean, like, that's like, you know what I mean? And the car chase is in a mini.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just stuff that, like, if you grew up in America and you're a teenager and you've never been to Europe, this is just cooler. It's more exotic. It's sexier.
I think they knew that, hence why we saw the Eiffel Tower over and over again, and mm-hmm. all of the things they kept rubbing our face. And also, well, I said that negatively, but I mean it in a good way. It was interesting to watch. And also, when Matt Damon was doing all of his press, he went around and he was like, listen, Saving Private Ryan and Talented Mr. Ripley and this movie, Europe's just got something we don't have here. We just got to film everything in Europe.
Yeah. Well, because if you think about, like, nowadays, okay, movies...
That's cool. I didn't know he said that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Movies that we do and have done the last couple episodes, like, you know, Taken takes place in Paris, but you would never be like, well, that's cool because it's Paris. It's like, it's just a given now. Or you think about, like, the Mission Impossible franchise, and they're always all over the world, but that's just... We just take it for granted now.
Yeah.
It's because you
expect it. You can't just have a great action movie like only take place in like Nebraska.
Spy movies don't just happen in the U.S.
No. Yeah.
It's borrowed though from way back when we had all those spaghetti and like anything that was going on in Italy and mm-hmm. all those films. So I think that if something works, then you should use it and great, go film overseas.
Definitely.
Sometimes you need to be in L.A. and other times you don't.
So the negative review here is from Jay Boyer of the Orlando Sentinel, and it says Lyman of Swingers and Go makes his big budget action film debut something of a clunker as he delivers a long, low heat chase interrupted by a middling car chase.
That's so not fair.
It's so unfair. I completely agree.
I believe we call that pacing.
Right.
In a good movie. If it was what he's talking about, if what he's saying is a negativism, if they would have done that differently, the movie would just be a high pace, like, crappy action movie.
Right.
You know, like, it needs those moments for things to seep in. It needs those moments where the relationships are building, where the tension is growing. Like,
right.
That's why this is like an action thriller drama. It's not just like a crappy action movie, like a bad spy movie.
Well, and Lyman says, I mean, he's like, this is not an action movie. It's like, this is a drama that has action sequences in it. That's what he talks about.
But for us, this is an action movie. Absolutely.
Yeah. Some people need to see more violence, more guns, all of those things, and that for them makes a great movie. I actually appreciate those things, but that's not what necessarily makes a great movie. There's a time and a place for it. I don't feel like it fit into this movie. I love the way that they handled it. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I agree. I think that review's very unfair.
And these both came out at the same time that the movie came out. These are incredibly relevant reviews for the
real-time
time
reviews. So I want to talk about the place that this place sits in, like, critically, in the metrics we usually use. Right,
like Rotten and IMDb?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So Rotten, you have the all critics review is 83%. Top critics give it a 78%. And audience gives it a 93%. Universally loved. This movie was a game changer at the time.
If you make a movie and those are the kind of numbers you get, you can be very, very happy with what you've done.
And you know that you're going to get a sequel.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But, interestingly enough, on IMDb it has a 7.9. Now, we talk about it every week, and I know you guys know that we always talk about the top 250.
8.1 is the cutoff, essentially, for a top 250 movie.
So here, this is like one of the moments that I feel like my theory is proved, and that is that The Bourne Ultimatum, which, by the way, is my favorite Bourne movie by a mile. Mm-hmm. It's the coolest one. I love the third movie. That movie is in the IMDb top 250. It's like got an 8.1 or 8.2 or something.
Right.
This movie has a 7.9 and doesn't make the list. Now, when you talk about favorite versus greatest, which is what the top 250 is supposed to be about, it's a ranking of the greatest films.
Right.
This film deserves to be on that list more than Ultimatum does, because this is the movie that made. Like, this is the character. This is the game changer. This is the style-wise. Like, you couldn't ever have the third movie without the first movie.
Right.
So that's where it's sort of like, if the movie is just a list of people's favorite movies, that's one thing. But if it's the top 250 all time, then this is the kind of thing where you have to have somebody in there moderating those numbers and saying, that's not fair just because the users like this movie a little more.
Right.
What do you think?
I mean, it comes down to, it's tough because another great example is you look at Batman Begins and you look at Dark Knight.
Sure.
Dark Knight destroys Batman Begins on the list. But Batman Begins is altogether a better movie. It's a better story.
It's cleaner.
It's cleaner. It just doesn't have Heath Ledger in it, which is just,
right.
You can't compare. Yeah. You can't compete. But it's the same thing with, like, Warrior. It's not a great movie, but I want to watch that movie every day. You know, it's got so many cliches in it, but the cliches are played to the nines, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's something to be said about how you said Ultimatum is your favorite in the series, and that's why it's on the list. Is that these movies that are people's favorites, you can't, like, I love Batman Begins, but I would probably watch Dark Knight more.
So would I. It's funny because I've used the Warrior argument before. I've said that exact statement. It's not a great movie, and you've argued, and you just said it, and I wanted to start arguing with you. I think it is a great movie.
It's a phenomenal movie. I mean, any movie that I've seen, like, 100 times, I've seen that movie probably 100 times.
The Dark Knight?
No shit.
No, Warrior.
Oh. Because it's an incredible movie, but you look at, like, the things that make a great movie, and it's, anyway.
I think that you just made a great thesis statement. That was a bold thesis, and that we're talking about right now, that this, just because something's your favorite doesn't necessarily mean it's the best. And I completely agree with that. I think that it's a different conversation about The Dark Knight, because I think that what that did for film is something different than Bourne Ultimatum did. Bourne Ultimatum didn't add anything to film that I hadn't seen before.
Right.
I just liked it a lot. I thought it was really good. I think this added something.
Yeah.
So I think Dark Knight added something. If you're bringing something new to the table, then you're contender.
Certainly. All right. Well, let's talk about what we think in
terms of... Let's go into our... go ahead.
Action scenes. Yeah. So we normally do something called Ultimate Action Scene, guys, and we're sick of it. We're kind of sick of it. We used to talk about it like this is the scene, the definitive action scene in the movie, and we'd, you know, research it and show you guys a making of video and talk about how it got done. We just spent 56 minutes talking about how this movie got made.
You want to try something new. You're doing new stuff.
This show is about what's awesome about these movies.
Because in great action movies... There usually is that one scene, but there's so many other scenes, other action scenes that are so important, that are just as important as that ultimate action scene, that it doesn't do the movie justice to just leave them out of the conversation.
So we're going to roll a couple of the best action scenes here in the background while we chat, and I think we're going to call this ultimate action sequence, and we're going to have a discussion about what we think the ultimate action sequence in this movie is.
It's got to be action sequences.
Sequi.
So what do you guys think?
For me, it's hard because there are some really great scenes, and this is a different kind of movie, but it ultimately would be when he says, red bag, and then from what happens from there to when he scales the wall outside and kind of ducks under. I think that's awesome. I think it shows that he's incredibly intelligent. He takes the cops down. He grabs the evacuation plan. He goes up the staircase. Yep. He has the earpiece.
Yeah.
We see that he has the finesse, the strength, the smarts, all those things that make him a great hero for us. And that's when I was really like, yes, this is somebody I'm going to get behind. And there was a lot of action to that scene. He did kick butt, so it qualifies for me.
Absolutely. I would agree that if we had to pick an action ultimate action scene, it would be that one. It's got, it hits all the numbers in it. It's got a chase, it's got fighting, it's got intelligence, all that good stuff. The car chase scene, though, when this movie came out, was one of the, if not the greatest car chase I'd almost ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, it was amazing when it came out.
And it has actually dated quite a bit with sound editing and speed, and then you go and you watch something like MI5, and you know that Tom Cruise is really driving 50 miles an hour on a motorcycle, and that he's actually driving the car with him and Simon Pegg in it. And when they have the wide shots of this, you can see that they're probably going like 30 miles an hour.
Well, what did we read about this? So when they went to do reshoots, Lyman was like, "We need to get this car chase done."
Yeah.
And the second unit actually filmed this, but it's all filmed out of sequence in different parts of Paris.
Yeah.
And so, he says in an interview, "If you know the geography of Paris, this scene doesn't make any sense.
None whatsoever. There's no cohesion to it at all."
And then there was some yellow van that kind of appeared out of nowhere for a little bit that wasn't there, and then came and helped them out. So that didn't make much sense either. I heard him talking about that.
Yeah. It's just. It's sweet. That one, yeah. It's a sweet scene. The car chase is great, and him driving a Mini Cooper, like an old beat up Mini Cooper, the way that he does is incredibly entertaining.
There's a bump.
But yeah, exactly. But it's
it wasn't as exciting
as we thought.
As I remembered it to be. Yeah.
Because you've seen so many things since then.
Yes.
Yeah, in 13 years, in terms of like sound and video editing, is pretty relevant.
I had a different ultimate action moment though.
Sure.
Okay.
When he uses that body to fly down the stairs
and
then shoots out.
Headshot
while falling.
I mean, the least realistic thing of all time, because he just would have died because gravity is still gravity. But, oh my God, that for me was everything.
So sweet.
Such an incredible moment.
He's like kicking the big fat guy.
I was going to say, that poor guy. That guy gets his ass kicked so bad.
Yeah.
Like, not only does he get disarmed and gets his ass kicked, and then he gets shot a bunch, and then he's, like, getting beaten to, like, when he's
through
him. Literally kicking it horse while it's down.
And
then
splattered.
He falls on top of him.
Yeah.
That guy is...
That's the moment.
I mean, so you have that scene, too, right? The whole him escaping the, like, little apartment at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
The headquarters, which is above, like, an adorable French cafe, right?
Yeah. Oh, of course it is.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, like, hidden or whatever. So there's, like, that scene. Then there's also the pen fight,
which is, that's one of those moments where you're just, like, okay, this dude can literally do anything.
Yeah, and like you said, he's deadly with anything. And then the second one, he does the same thing with the magazine. Mm-hmm. It's, like, kind of a throwback to the first movie.
I love when he's walking around the apartment and the tension is just building because he knows something is wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you think it was all weird that the guy swings in and smashes through the glass like he knows Matt Damon's there or something?
After he already went downstairs and shot somebody?
And then starts shooting instead of just like shooting through the glass?
Right, because like they have a moment in Bourne Legacy where they do that, where the girl's like hiding in the corner. He's like, in 30 seconds, I want you to shoot your gun. And then she shoots the gun, the guy runs up the stairs, and Renner's in the closet, and he just shoots four shots through the door and kills the guy. That's what you would think this guy would do. But he's also not Jason Bourne.
Right.
Also, why did he wait till the exact moment that he walked over to the door? How long had he been there? There were so many questions about this scene. As much as the scene kicks ass, so I kind of don't care that I have all these questions.
Yeah.
If you actually analyze it, it doesn't make much sense.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely movie magic happening here where it's just to add to the scene. Yeah, she's just standing there, like, do anything.
I don't even care if at this point you run away. Do something. Don't stand there and watch. Oh, and she does it.
He's like, yeah, thanks. I know. I've been fighting him for about a minute now.
Be either this kick-ass girl who goes and helps him or run away, but do not stand there.
Don't just stand there.
Do not.
Although I would stand there and watch this.
Yeah,
like a movie.
Like, this is awesome.
Of all the action sequences in the movie,
I hope the good guy wins.
The one to me that stands out as the most memorable is definitely the Clive Owen thing.
It's amazing.
When he kills him in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as like...
There's not like really action to it.
Action-y.
It's just
dramatic. He shoots, he blows up the car, you know, and then he runs.
It's like a gas tank. It's like one of those big propane tanks outside houses.
That's like my favorite scene because it's got action. It's got the gun. It's like a gunfight. Got an explosion. And then I love the conversation. I love the moment.
This is it. This is where he stands up. Sorry to interrupt you. I just love that. He's got all those holes in him. He's like this.
It kind of is like
damn
zombie apocalypse. Yeah. Pops back up. That's some Fear the Walking Dead stuff right there.
Couple broken bones. Okay, so
I just gave you the plug. You're not going to take it?
What? Oh, Fear the Walking Dead. Of course, Fear the Walking Dead plug. If you guys love Fear the Walking Dead, please, we have an after show for that we do on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. that I'm on the panel for. That I'm really excited for you guys to check out. So tune in this Sunday and check that out. If you're watching Fear the Walking Dead, the first episode was fantastic. It was
really good.
Thanks, Rox. Mm-hmm. Got me on that one. As far as my favorite action,
we do without you.
Yeah. She's...
I don't know. You guys do it every week. You know,
like
I'm not invited very
pro.
Often, so.
She is. Guys, if you're watching this and you want Roxy to permanently be the third host, tweet in. Just tweet at us and
do
let
it.
Us know.
YouTube comments, tweet. Just, we need her.
If you
need
can, her. If you guys can convince Roxy to be the permanent third host, she's on the show.
I would love to.
Really?
We'll talk about it.
Okay. I would love to. No.
No, but I was going to say that the reason I like that Clive Owen scene so much is because you have the action, then he shoots him, and then when they're talking, they do this really interesting thing where it's like, first he's really, 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 he's super, super present.
Yeah.
But he's...
kind of like laughs a little bit.
He's having that rush of like, I'm in shock because I'm dying.
Yeah.
And then he starts to wince, and it's like he starts crying, and he just falls over and dies.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're getting like a rush of blood, and your heart's pumping really fast, and now you're just going to die.
What I love about...
And they're connected. They have that moment,
exactly.
Too.
You didn't want Matt Damon to have to kill him, like, again. You know what I mean? Like, execute him, essentially.
So that's my favorite line in the movie. I'm going to jump into favorite lines. So okay. This is an interactive part of the show, guys. If you're watching and you want to hang out with us and let us know what you think, leave it in the comments on YouTube or tweet at any of us. If you want to tweet at us and let us know your thoughts, I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Andrew Guy on Twitter.
I'm at Roxy Stryer.
You can let us know, and this is where we're going to do favorite line. We're going to rank the hero and the villain. We're going to do a little bit of a recast, talk about Tom Cruise a little bit. So
the bread and the butter.
Interactive? Yeah.
So my favorite line in this movie is the line that Clive Owen says to Matt Damon, and then in the third movie at the end of it, when Matt Damon jumps off the roof.
Spoiler alert.
And the same, the asset in the third movie says it to him. It's Clive Owen looks at him after like his whole moment, and he's like, look at this. He's like, look what they make you give.
Look what they make you give.
And that's like, that's my line. I love that line.
It's a beautiful line.
It's good.
It's a cool fucking line. It's just like, and Clive Owen was ticketed as like a big part of this movie.
Yeah.
He was like billed like he was, but he's got about 3.5 minutes of screen time.
Let's split up throughout the whole entire movie.
In an interview, he's like, I basically just put on some glasses and posed for the camera.
Yeah, that's it.
That's like what he did.
That was good. Good work.
It's like a Nick Cage Clive Owen.
Yeah, is
right
it?
There. Yeah,
okay.
Bit.
What's your favorite line?
I want Roxy to go
Hot
first.
Chat.
Well, I couldn't even wait, so I had to send over a text message about this, but I don't even know if you guys know what I'm talking about. When the Marie Jason Bourne scene, and she says, with you, you probably just forget about me if I stayed here. She's getting all nervous. You can tell she kind of likes him.
Oh, yeah.
He looks at her and says, how could I forget about you?
You're the only person
I know, and I melted.
It's so sweet.
My
heart, it's adorable.
Everything,
absolutely.
Just like, oh, that was one of those moments where I was like, how do I get this to be my life? This psychotic broad is here and I am not. What do I have to do? Like, it was perfect. But then I'm also like, is it that sweet? Because it's factually true.
Like, well, yeah, exactly. It's like one of those things. It's like, he's not even, that's the super suave spy moment where it's like, I'm not even trying right now, but it's just like the most endearing line of the whole movie.
So cute.
It's like a really clever way for him to be not only like strategically but also emotionally the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because you have to be the smartest guy in the room to be successful as a spy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be at all times. That's like, in fact, the fact that like Clooney hasn't had a franchise built around him as a super spy yet. He kind of has, actually. I guess Ocean's 11 kind of is that, but he's a heist guy.
Yeah.
Not really a spy. Anyway,
yes, she totally went upstairs.
Yeah,
so it worked.
Yep,
she did.
Got her inside. What's your favorite line?
Look, I can tell you the license plate. I love this line. I just like to see it. So he goes, I can tell you the license plate numbers of all 6 cars outside. I can tell you that our waitress is left-handed. The guy sitting up at the counter weighs 250 pounds and knows how to handle himself. I know the best place to look for a gun is in the cab outside of the gray truck outside. And at this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking. Now, why would I know all that? How can I know that and not know who I am? It's just, I remember that perfectly from when I saw it in theaters.
I remember seeing this movie in theaters and thinking it was awesome. And then I remember going over to my buddy's house, and he was one of these kids who was like homeschooled, and he like was like, you know, way, way over-parented. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have any friends really. And he had just seen this movie, And apparently, like, he had just seen the movie, and he had, like, committed to memory several of the lines that because we were pretty young, and he, like, said that line to me, like, verbatim.
Yeah.
And he's like, have you seen it yet? And I was like, that's a sign of how cool this movie is.
Yeah.
This guy just memorized the line.
Well, then, like, we had someone tweeted us today, like, any hints of the movie? And I just said, I could tell you the license plate number of all six cars outside.
Immediately.
And then he immediately responded. Yeah.
Hurst.
Our boy.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
I think that's also the moment that she realized that he wasn't completely full of crap.
Well, yeah, because up until that point, because she's still saying it earlier in the diner, like, you know, people, what is she, like, adrenaline, or, like, people do crazy things when they're scared, things like that. He's like, no, listen to this.
Right.
Yeah. She says, I knew where the exit signs were also.
Right. She's like, doesn't make me a super spy.
You're not getting it.
Yeah. You're not a super spy like Jason Bourne. You're not Treadstone.
You know who else isn't a super spy like Jason Bourne? Julia Stiles, because she's in this movie.
Oh, I know.
We, like, talked about that for a second. We were like,
this is way past her prime.
I was like, actually, Save the Last Dance was the previous year.
Yeah. Somehow.
Really? Yeah. She's, like, right in her prime. She's like, I mean, and she just didn't.
That was bizarre. I completely forgot about that. And then I was watching. What?
You know, she's in the whole series.
Even stranger is the fact that Julia Stiles, like, she still looks great. She's only 34.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's stunning.
She's not a good actress.
Save Last Dance was great.
She's not a good actress. We had this moment where she's like, she gets that one line of like, oh, we got 2 hours, blah, 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 and we got to clean up and this and that. And you're just like, okay, that's why she's not doing it.
She has a bad
She's
line.
Okay. She's okay. Okay. Give my girl some breaks.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen Julia Stiles act. My point was, like, given the right role, I feel like her career could still just come out of nowhere.
Oh, absolutely.
And it feels like she's been gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's favorite lines. Now, this is an interesting one. Hero villain ranking. I don't feel that Chris Cooper as a villain ranks for me, even though he's awesome. He's a great performance.
No, he doesn't.
I don't even know if he's a villain.
Yeah, but Jason Bourne. And we talk about this, guys. This is, you rank based on the movie, not based on the character. So, for instance, like, every Ethan Hunt is a different Ethan Hunt ranking. So every Jason Bourne is a different Jason Bourne ranking. So this is Bourne 1, Jason Bourne ranking. I mean, my favorite Jason Bourne is still Ultimatum Jason Bourne.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, the most effective one, who, like, does the coolest shit and has all the lines that I remember, that's all this one.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the coolest one because he's still figuring out who he is. Like, he's going through the process. Again, we talked about earlier in the show, in 2 and 3, it's just him being awesome.
Right.
You know?
In this one, you see instinctually, this is him. This is what he does. So I think that this is the coolest of the Bournes. I think that he, not only does he rank, but he is top 5 for me. Like, I think that he is just everything. I think he's everything. I think he is our James Bond. Like, oh, I love him.
Well, last week on, so we did Predator last week, guys, which, by the way, is an awesome movie and an awesome episode, and you should check it out. But we did Predator on the show last week, and I said that Dutch, played by Schwarzenegger, is my third favorite action hero of all time. Which is the highest I'd ranked anybody so far. Where I believe, and we keep promising to get the graphic up, we will get the graphic up, we just don't have it yet. But we had both agreed that Rambo First Blood Part 2 Rambo was, like, somewhere in the top 5, 4th or 5th for both of us. Jason Bourne? Bourne Identity Jason Bourne? I feel like he's top 5. Maybe he's number 6. But I like him better than Rambo, so
I do
maybe
too.
He's
I like
number
him more
4.
Than Rambo. I like him more than Rambo because he is, it's more, even though what he does is, like, incredible and, like, no one could do that, but, like, he doesn't go through a forest and kills, like, 100 people by himself. You know what I mean? Like, there's just more believability to it. Rambo is a complete savage. Complete badass.
Totally.
But Jason Bourne is, like we talked about earlier, he's, like, the everyman's superhero.
I think I have to put Jason Bourne in my top 5 and maybe in my top 3. Maybe he's number 2. Maybe he's number 4. He's top 5. I can't quite decide. He's either 2, 3, or 4, and Dutch might move one slot based on that. But he is 2nd, 3rd, or 4th.
I'm going 7th.
Seventh.
I'm just doing it.
Okay. Strong.
Yeah.
This is a random number you just picked.
Well, we have some context.
I wrote down a 7.
Oh, I see what you did there. That helps. I can't give a number, but yeah, top 5. He's just up there. I think that he's one of the best, but I have to go rewatch every single one of these films. I think that he would probably place in the top 5 maybe 3 times. Like, I think he's everything.
Yeah, that is tough. If you start to go character to character, you start to wonder, like, do you have 3 Jason Bournes in the top 10? I don't know about that. But the significance of this particular Jason Bourne, because of when it came out, what it meant and everything like that, you know.
And that transition.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if Jack Ryan ever ranks. Like, I wonder if any of the Baldwin Jack Ryan or one of the Harrison Ford Jack Ryans. Anyway.
I wanted to talk about this really quick because it was something that we discussed in our notes and we didn't get to it.
I'm excited. Because
it's just a cool piece of trivia. So the name Bourne came from Ansel Bourne, a preacher in Rhode Island, the first documented case of dissociative fuge, a condition not like dissociative amnesia or identity disorder. One day in 1887, he forgot who he was and started a new life in Pennsylvania under the name Brown and opened a convenience store. And about 3 months later, he woke up, and not only did he remember his old life, but completely forgot his new life and had no idea why he was in Pennsylvania.
Do you know what television show used a fuge state? Breaking Bad. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He has the same thing. Dissociative, that's what he... Well, he does.
Claims.
He claims to have it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
When he wanders off.
Yeah.
Naked in the grocery store.
Yeah.
I just think that's cool.
It's awesome.
Random.
It is really cool. I would love to have been his second life and then have him wake up and be like, by the way, peace.
I have no idea who you are. I'm leaving.
Devastating.
And you're like, I'm Treadstone, so I was never in this anyway.
Exactly. That is interesting trivia. I also thought that another thing that I read that kind of bummed me out was that the author of the novels passed away the year before
the movie came out.
The movie came out, and I was like, man, just hold on a little longer.
Just pull through, man.
Yeah.
He died during post-production, which is just a bummer because this is a great movie.
Well, at least he saw some cuts.
At least he saw the Richard Chamberlain adaptation made, so he got to see his book made in a movie once.
That's too bad.
It's unfortunate.
Rest in peace, brother.
Rest in peace, absolutely. So, you guys know that we do recasts. We always involve you in this. Your recasts are quite frequently more developed and more awesome than ours. But Ben's. And we appreciate it so much that you do it. It's really a lot of fun for us. So we are going to be recasting Matt Damon, Chris Cooper, and Franca Potente as if they are modern day.
Yes, as if you were starting Bourne Identity, this franchise, with these people now.
Appearing in, winter 2015 in theaters, battling against Star Wars. Who would be those three characters? And
why do you have to put it up against Star Wars?
Well, okay, maybe we'll come out the month before. It's kind of not the point, Roxy. I think you're missing the point.
let's go from the bottom up.
Let's start with Franca. Who do you guys have for her?
Okay. I think that this is the only choice. Do you guys know Marianne Cotillard?
Yeah, of course.
She would crush this role. This is made for her. She would legitimately be everything. She wouldn't be a psychotic, and she wouldn't run, and she'd probably kick some butt. And she's an Oscar winner, so, you probably do.
It depends on how old the Bourne is.
Yeah.
Because she's like a little bit...
You think she's too old?
No. I think that...
Chick looks like she's 20.
I think she's too old.
Yeah, she...
I
think that...
She's the best.
Bourne has to be the appropriate age. Yes. I love Marion Cotillard. I think she's a phenomenal actress. I went with Alicia Vikander. She's in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I haven't seen it, but I'm in love with you.
The hot girl from the trailer you see...
With the dark hair?
In the trailer?
Dark hair.
Yep.
She's got an accent.
Uh-huh.
She could totally play this gypsy character.
What did you look up to base this on?
I love you!
I am so happy you're not a casting director, because the fact that you cast somebody based on a movie you didn't see but know is out is devastating.
I know that she could pull off this role. This role is not incredibly deep.
That's true.
Any girl can play a crazy girl. Okay, I grew up with three sisters and a mom. Anyone could pull it off, all right? I know that. She's attractive enough. She
could
look the part.
Any of your sisters and your mom could all play this role?
No, they can play crazy. Oh. They can get real crazy, real easy.
Okay.
I love her.
I almost take offense to that, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not a slight. It's not a bad thing. It's just, I love you, Mom. I love you, Leslie, Julian, Sandra. This is not... Move on.
So I went with somebody who I know naturally has a British accent. That we've only ever heard, or I've only ever heard, with a southern accent.
Alicia Vikander.
And that's Lauren Cohen, who plays Maggie on The Walking Dead, a woman who I love to death and think is amazing. And she feels like she looks the part to me, and I'm imagining if she had the British accent, or if she just put on, if she put the German accent on.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure she could pull it off.
Yeah.
If she can do it, if you can go from British to American, I'm sure you can go from British to German.
She was just on one of my TV shows, like Flash or Arrow. She played a villain for a minute, Bug Eye something. She's awesome.
I love her.
I'm a big fan of her.
I can see
that.
Such a fan.
I'm pretty happy with her first
round. I think
she's
married to someone, but...
You know who's not married?
If not, you want a lunch date? We're setting up lunch dates.
Yeah, let's get lunch dates set up. Chris Cooper. Let's recast Chris Cooper. Let's
Conklin. Somebody else go first. I'm always having to go first.
Just like you.
A
character who they never even say his name in the movie.
No. Him and Cox's names are not stated in the whole movie. It's only in the credits.
It's only in the credits.
Okay. Yeah.
Fight for it.
I'm going to go with Gary Oldman.
That's great. I mean, you can't ever say that Gary Oldman can't do something.
Right. No. I agree with
that. He's technically perfect.
He is amazing.
I think I recast him in the last one I was here. He's great.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah.
I went with Michael Shannon.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's good. He's the right age.
The look, the age. He's a good bad guy. Like in Iceman and in Man of Steel, like the dude's just evil. I mean, Gary Oldman is too. Those are great.
He's a weird PR person. Didn't you guys just hear that he got locked in a bathroom and he had on set and he had these flippers on his hands and he couldn't out. He was late to shoot. And
what's happening? This is bullshit.
Some person from craft services found him in the bathroom. It was really like a big deal. He made everybody late.
That sounds...
Couldn't get him off and was like freaking out in the porta potty or something.
That sounds like an article you read on The Onion or like a Funny or Die sketch.
Right.
And like John C. Reilly is like playing Michael Shannon with like flip runners in his hands or something.
No, it really just happened. He's an interesting dude.
That is hilarious.
Bummer for him. Yeah, you can just picture him in the bathroom. I went with Bryan Cranston.
I thought about that as well.
Super strong.
Yeah, all three of those are great.
Cranston might be... just the best, actually.
I wanted to use him, but Jason used, or someone used him 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I was just like, I don't want to use that. But I love him in that role.
But then again, I hate killing him off, but the same way that I hate killing him off in Godzilla. Because what are you doing?
Yeah. Right.
Spoiler alert.
It's fair. all right, let's go with our lead. I wonder if any of us settled on Ryan Gosling like me.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. I love Ryan Gosling. I can't argue with it. I just feel like he doesn't look the part that Jason Bourne looked in the first one. He is too pretty. He's too jacked. Like,
you think he's prettier
than Matt Damon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I think Matt Damon's prettier.
Prettier.
He's like, I mean,
Ryan Gosling's
a heartthrob. Like, you see that guy walk in a room, everyone notices him.
But Matt Damon was a heartthrob.
But this character walking in a room, that's not the same thing.
I feel like I have authority on this issue a little bit.
I don't know about that.
Maybe we should call your sisters and your mom.
We're in touch.
I went with Miles Teller because he's young. He can play the role. He's a good actor.
He's really young, though.
Did you see what Matt Damon looked like at the beginning of this movie?
He looks like he's like 19.
That's what Miles Teller would do, the same thing, and he's not shredded. You know, you don't want that. You want him to look like an everyman, almost, that's in shape, that is capable of fighting.
So, I don't know. I mean, I didn't see Fantastic Four. You did, Rock Bronx?
Yeah. I think he's an incredible actor. I saw Whiplash. I saw Fantastic Four. I've seen him in everything for a long time now. I even saw him in, Divergent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's great. I hear he's the biggest dickhead. So is
Tom Hardy, though, and I love him.
Yeah. It's hard for me to cast people that I hear are just so obnoxious. And again, I've never met him, so I'm not saying that firsthand. Maybe he's a great dude and he had a bunch of off days. But I think he's ridiculously talented.
Very talented.
Yeah.
I went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And I think he would be very charming and talkative enough and is the right age to go with Marion Cotillard. And I think that he'd rock.
Do you want Christopher Nolan to direct it? Is that what we're going to go with next?
You got all three of them in there.
Direct everything. Yeah.
Isn't a knock saying that mine is better than both of yours for the cast of Jason Bourne. But maybe it's just what's become of these guys and their careers, and you look at Joseph Gordon-Levitt and you look at Ryan Gosling, I just feel like they're too... Like, you look at Miles Teller, he's about in that same place that Matt Damon was at in his career. He's on his way up. He's had some massive movies, one of which being an Oscar winner, but he's not quite like, oh my God, Miles Teller. Whereas Ryan Gosling and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, they're A-list. They're like the top of the A-list.
Yeah, you would like massive. Really see the actor more than...
That'd be like if Brad Pitt originally played this role.
I don't think Man from U.N.C.L.E. chick would go with Miles Teller.
Why?
I just don't think she would.
Doesn't she look like a straight-up supermodel?
No! I love you! I love her!
It has nothing to do with his looks, just the way that he portrays himself usually in these roles. He's not like this chick magnet.
Well, in the trailer for Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is what I have referenced to, there's an extended trailer in the beginning with her driving where she doesn't look like a supermodel. She looks like this chick. And that's why I thought, because I like thought about it and I was like, okay, I just want to watch the trailer because, you know. But when you go and you watch this moment of her and Henry Cavill driving away,
yeah.
She doesn't look like she does later in the movie where you're like, okay, this is like the scene in Mission Impossible 3 when the chick dresses up for the party. And then there's like other times when she's like more,
yeah,
you know, more of like an agent. Whereas later on she looks like a supermodel.
Sure.
So I think she can play both parts.
Fair. All right. Well, that's our recast, guys.
Alicia, if you want to come on, let me just take over.
We are at 81 minutes, so we are going to skip through Cage versus Cruise this week.
Oh, my God. I'm so sad about it.
Look, all I need to tell you is that if you just basically take the... can I see your quote?
No.
I can six license
plates?
No,
because I'm going to do it in Nick Cage's voice.
Oh, all right. Fine.
Remember when we said we were going to skip through this
part? We were
going
to skip through it. So, guys...
I can tell you the license plate numbers of all six cars outside.
So, guys, there are three categories of action movies in our book, and those three categories are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. The first category being totally legit, which is like Die Hard or The Fugitive, movies that like really feel like they're super strong dramas that have action in them.
Grounded in reality.
You have totally ridiculous movies that just fall off a cliff of absurdity, and that is going to be like Face Off or Con Air. And then you have movies in the middle, which are ridiculously legitimate, which is like the combo category.
The Rock, Predator,
Speed, movies that are like great dramas that are action-packed, campy, but also compelling, and don't feel like they just lose credibility for long stretches of time.
Right.
This
movie is totally legitimate.
Yeah, I have a heart. I don't even have to think about it.
Anybody who calls it totally ridiculous is ridiculous. Yeah. It's totally ridiculous. Yeah, I think it's totally legitimate.
You could make some arguments for ridiculously legitimate, I think.
Because like of the fugue state?
Yeah, and like the falling down on the big guy.
Right.
The headshot flying through the air.
And the fact that there's snow on the ground but nobody slips.
Yeah, just things like that, but... That's just like when you're... That's like nitpicky.
Right.
This movie's totally legitimate.
Oh, when you want to nitpick this movie, let me know. I'll nitpick with you guys.
I hear
you. But yeah, I think it's totally legitimate.
Yeah, I would say
so. In a great way.
Totally legit.
Totally.
So that pretty much wraps it up, guys.
Legit.
That's 83... I think that might be our longest show to date. We just... did you want to keep dancing?
Too legit. Too legit to quit. Mm-hmm. Too legit.
So that does it for Action Movie Anatomy this week, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you so much, Roxy Stryer, for being our lovely guest.
We love having you, Roxy.
I love being
Make
here.
Her come on the show every week.
If you guys
Make her do it.
Tweet at everybody and just let her know that you want her as the permanent guest. You know, we'd love to have her.
You guys are the best. Thank you.
She just doesn't return my phone calls, so...
Only on Tuesdays.
I've sent you numerous MySpace messages, and I have gotten nothing back.
Oh, Twitter DMs?
Twitter DMs, yeah, exactly. So, guys, if you want an Action Movie Anatomy mug, one more time. I'm going to plug this one last time.
Clean it up.
If you want an Action Movie Anatomy mug, step one, get us 10 written reviews on iTunes. Search for Action Movie Anatomy on iTunes and rate and review. You have to just write a review. Doesn't even have to be a positive one, honestly.
No.
I prefer it to be positive, but it doesn't have to be.
And I want your recast on YouTube.
We want your recast on YouTube. But the first thing to do is get us to 10 reviews on iTunes, and we will start raffling random drawing mug giveaways. So do that. If you want to tweet at any of us, let us know your thoughts on the episode or the show. You can tweet at me at Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Andrew Guy.
At Roxy Stryer.
And I think we're all on Instagram under the same thing.
Except for me, I don't have Instagram.
Fair enough. That's our show, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.